The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this week. In this week's show, we're going to touch a little more, just because it's been popular, touch a little more on annuities, specifically annuity features. So we've heard from a lot of listeners that they really didn't understand a whole lot about annuities and their uses, at least within our planning process. These uses for annuities and how they work, they can be quite confusing and complex and not appropriate in a lot of cases where they are used, but they can serve a useful purpose for the right situation. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and related to that, I think Jim has an initial question from somebody for me or us, I guess, that we'll tackle first. But welcome, Jim. Thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Can you hear me okay from the Southern Command Studio, as I like to put it?
Yeah, the Southern Command
Center. Am I okay? Should I get closer or further away?
You're good to go.
It's good to go.
Good to go.
All right. Excellent. So I am in the Southern Command Center, otherwise known as my sunroom, with a very precious little room in the sunroom. And I'm afraid it's going to be that way for quite some time. We haven't really announced to people why there's precious little room in Jim's sunroom.
I thought you mentioned it, but...
Did I mention it?
I don't recall. We've talked about it, so I might just be remembering a
conversation. Oh, I might have, because that's why I was in the closet last week.
Yes. So you did mention it. So he's still in reconstruction mode in his basement.
Yes, from the frozen pipes that you might as well throw on top of all the crap that's happened to Jim over the past 3 months. But yeah, everything in the basement is now up in the sunroom in a bunch of totes. I never told you my tote story, did I?
No, I'm a fan of totes, though. I have lots of totes.
I'm a tote kind of guy, too. And I also feed birds. So I get a lot of different birds. I kind of go a little overboard since I don't have dogs anymore. Mm-hmm. So I've adopted my wild birds. So, I mean, I've got all different kinds of bird seed individually put in totes. And then, of course, the peanuts, the crushed peanuts, the whole peanuts. Same thing with the sunflower seeds, the shelled sunflower seeds, the crushed sunflower seeds. Just, I mean, my birds eat well. Okay. So I was buying some totes at Lowe's a couple weeks ago, actually probably 2 months ago now, and I'm putting the totes into the back of my truck, and some guy comes up to me, and he goes, "Hey, you like totes?"
Shut up.
And, no, I'm serious. And I was like, "They're okay." And he says, "I see you're buying some." And he goes, "What are you going to do with them?" And now I'm starting to get a little, I'm like, "What the hell's it to you what I'm going to do with them?" And so I just looked at him. I said, "I'm going to put stuff in them."
That's what I would have said.
And he said to me, he goes next, he says, "Do you want to buy some more?" And I'm thinking, oh my God, this guy's selling hot totes out of the back of his truck or something. And I said, do I want to buy some more? And he says, yeah, I've got 30 of them. And I'm selling them for $5 each. And he says, they're not the kind like you have. He says, they're the black ones with the yellow tops that stack on top of each other. I know exactly the totes he's talking about. And I says, yeah, I'm familiar with them. He says, I've got 30 of them. I'll give them to you $5 each. Well, they regularly go for 10 bucks each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless they're on sale.
You can get them on sale for about $8, I admit. Mm-hmm. But I thought $5 each, not bad. Mm-hmm. So anyways, he went on to tell me that he had just moved here. And he, instead of using boxes, he used totes. And now he doesn't need them. And he saw me putting a bunch of totes in my truck. So, he thought maybe I'd be interested.
There's a fan of totes. Maybe I can unload my used totes on him.
So I took his business card. And a couple weeks later, I called him because I started thinking I could really use those totes if I do move to Kentucky or Southern Ohio someday. Mm-hmm. The totes will come in handy. They're plastic. They'll fit in my garage on the roof rafters. They'll be out of the way and they don't rot. So, yeah, I'll go buy them. So when I got a hold of him, Chris, he was down to 17.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, he didn't have all 30. So anyways, I bought those 17, plus, of course, the totes that I had bought the day he accosted me. And they came in very handy because we could put a lot of the stuff in the basement in all these totes. So my sunroom is full of totes and bookshelves and just a mess. Wow. But anyways, that's my totes story.
Good thing you had those totes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing I had them. I was second guessing. Friends think I'm crazy because, well, you've been to my house a few times. I kind of hoard things.
Yeah. I learned that when I saw
the
camo.
You picked on my camo. Mm-hmm. I got a camo. I could wear new camo every day and make it through the year without having to do laundry.
Why have only one of something when you can have 10?
Or 20 or 30.
Or 17. Yeah, exactly.
So, stocking up on totes, my friends, they're like, that's Jim. Mm-hmm. But as soon as something's gone, people call me, hey, do you have this? Do you have that? Mm-hmm. So, but the totes came in handy. Less than 2 weeks after picking up those totes, my pipes are bursting in the basement. And not only that, the totes came in handy for the crews that I hired to take out all the wet rug and the foam thing underneath the rug and all the drywall. They were using the totes to carry it all upstairs.
Let's just hope that there's no one listening to this show as their first show, because they're going to think, what did they stumble across? This must be mislabeled. Yeah, this show is not about retirement. They're talking about totes and sheetrock. What is going on?
Sorry for those of you who are new. For those of you who know me, you're like, there he goes again. And please spare the emails for me to shut up. I'll move on now. But anyways, that's what's happening. But over the past week, we've gotten a lot of questions in, Chris, on annuities. I guess that's good. It's showing that our listeners have an open mind. They want to learn. Hopefully, if they've listened to the last few shows on indexed annuities, they've heard us say repeatedly, we're not pushing them. We're not fans of them. They're just a tool. We want to share our knowledge of them with our listeners so they can decide if they can come in handy or not. And I don't mean indexed annuities. I mean any type of annuity, whether it's a deferred annuity, a deferred indexed annuity, a multi-year guaranteed annuity, a single premium immediate annuity, all the types of tools that we sometimes chat about on the show. I'm just trying to give you a little bit more knowledge and information on them. So we got a pretty good email with two questions. I got good news and bad news for this listener. Question number one, we're going to get to. Question number two, going to be a hell of a lot harder for him to figure out question number two than he thinks. And I have to actually do some research and get some more information from him. It's on the taxation of an annuity that he inherited from his father. That seems to me to be an annuity that was 1035 at some point in time from another annuity. It's going to be a mess. It's not going to be nearly as straightforward as what he thinks to figure out the tax situation. But I'm not going to bother with that question today until I get some more answers. But that part of his question made me realize I got to start talking about the taxation of annuities. What happens, not so much when you're alive, that's pretty straightforward. When the owner of the annuity is alive, the taxation issue, folks, is going to be quite simple. in the taxation when you're taking money out is what I'm talking about. But when you die, Chris, you think inherited IRAs can be complex? Welcome to annuities. And it can get very, very complex when the owner or the annuitant of an annuity passes away. So we'll get to that on future shows. But today I started thinking, let's address this gentleman's question. And then there's a few other items I want to make sure people understand about deferred annuities, which is the type of annuities we've been talking about for the last few shows. So we're going to mention that as well. But let me get to this gentleman's question. We're going to call him George, George, as we always do. He is from Missouri, and he did say Missouri had their first elk hunt in 2020, but he did not get to draw a tag for it. So it's good to see that elk are being reintroduced throughout the United States. A lot of people don't realize, Chris, elk used to be nationwide, and they used to be in the forests and the plains. But, of course, hunting pressure and development pushed them up into the Rocky Mountains, and that's kind of the last stronghold of elk is up in the mountains. But they used to be a plains and forested animal. I was recently reading a biography on Tecumseh, who was an Indian in the Ohio River Valley region. And it mentioned a lot of times elk. So even in Kentucky and Ohio and Michigan, where Tecumseh lived, they were elk. So you don't find them anymore, but they used to be out there.
I just kind of take them for granted because I've always lived where they were plentiful. So
yeah,
they're,
I mean,
they're nothing strange
drive
for me.
Around, right. Yeah. Oh, it's kind of like my friend in Alaska with moose. I mean, they're
right.
Just everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah.
In Anchorage, yeah. Where he lives. He's like, yeah, another moose. But out here, a moose, people will stop and jump out of their cars and start taking photos of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get to his question. Mm-hmm. Hi, Jim and Chris. Glad you made it back to the podcast. I think he's talking about me, not you. Your description of pulling yourself out of your barn was chilling. I didn't mean to chill anyone. I was just trying to let people know what I was going through. I have a thought and I have a question. As I already said, folks, his question has to do with the taxation of an inherited annuity. We're not going to get to that today. They're much more complicated than people will imagine. But his thought is what we're going to address today. Mm-hmm. So he says, here's my thought. Count me in the category of annuity skeptics. Mm-hmm. But your recent podcasts are opening my eyes. And folks, that's all Chris and I are trying to do. Chris, do we push annuities? I don't even remember the last time we sold an income annuity. We have helped people with MIGAs. But do we push annuities, or is that process designed to keep people out of annuities?
You definitely couldn't use the word push. It can be a suggestion for consideration. When we find that it might be appropriate. I think the reason why we aren't doing a whole lot now is the demographic we're working with. There's a lot of people that may in the future seriously be considering an income annuity, but they're not getting it now. They're waiting until they see how things develop and see if they actually need it. What they are doing now is reserving some resources, some of their liquid assets, so that they, if they decide in the future to get an annuity, they will have the money to do so and they won't have spent it on other things. So they do have that set up now, but we're not pushing them. And even, you know, 10 years from now, maybe when everyone that we're talking to now is older and getting to the stage where they might be considering them, I'm going to recommend to people that they reassess their situation, make sure that it makes sense, look at their whole situation and how it's evolved over that time, and then make a rational decision at that point. So no, push would be the wrong word.
Exactly. And that's what I just want to make it clear, because we are talking about them. We're talking about them because we haven't talked about them that much lately. And I just want to give you guys a lot of information, similar to what we did with long-term care insurance recently after my stroke. But multi-year guaranteed annuities we have talked about and we do help clients with, because they're a wonderful tool right now in this low interest rate environment for positioning, getting your money positioned to be spent. We won't get into that in this question. But I'm glad at least he wrote, Chris, that our podcasts are opening his eyes. But he has some questions, so he goes on. I have listened to the shows going over the basics of some of the various types of annuities And I have this thought I was hoping you could address, perhaps on a future EDU show. Well, his wish came true.
Here we are.
Look at that. It's like he rubbed the belly of a genie lamp.
What?
Okay.
You rub Buddha's belly. You rub the lamp of the genie. There is no belly touching on a genie, just for clarity.
You rub the belly of a genie?
Nope. You rub the Buddha
belly.
Did
you watch I Dream a Genie? He rubbed the lamp.
He never touched her belly one time on that show, I can guarantee
you. I'd have touched her belly, let me tell you that much.
Easy.
If I was Major Nelson. All right. Where was I now? I am a single man. Don't get me going on that.
His answer, his wish has come true. That's where we're at. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I got genie in my head now.
Clearly.
All right.
Barbara Eden. Barbara Eden.
Don't tell me you didn't think of Genie, too, when you were a young man.
I'm not quite as old as you are, so I had to watch it in reruns. But, yeah, I liked the show.
Yeah. All right. I'm sure you contemplated that very question every young adolescent male of our generation had to. Marianne, Ginger, or Genie? Or all three?
I never mixed those together. I always kept the Gilligan crew separate from the other. I didn't really...
Really?
I didn't think of them as one group.
Oh. Perhaps my mind just works differently.
Yeah, maybe. Rubbing bellies of genies. Go ahead.
All right. Perhaps a future EDU show. Mm-hmm. Well, here's his wish came true. Let's make up an example of a typical purchase of an annuity to cover minimum dignity floor income needs. Mm-hmm. Let's say, and this is the gentleman making up the hypothetical client, Chris. Mm-hmm. Let's say George, because we call everyone George, is a 70-year-old male and finds he will need an annuity to cover his minimum dignity floor income, but he doesn't need it right away. Mm-hmm. Now, let's pause there. That's a typical situation we see, and I think one you were referencing, Chris. We're helping people figure out what the older them may need, but they don't necessarily need it today, correct?
Correct.
Exactly. So he's saying, folks, the 70-year-old male is going to need additional income for his minimum dignity floor. Now, he doesn't get into how this George, in his example, came up with his need. I would hope they did a retirement analysis. They don't necessarily have to do it with our firm, but that's part of what we do, part of the deliverable in our retirement plan that Chris runs with his department and the four people who assist him at our office. He will help people determine, do they need to reserve any of their assets for future minimum dignity floor needs after adjusting for pension, Social Security income? Do they need additional income? And if so, when? And then try to help the people figure out how much money they need to reserve today in retirement to cover that need in the future. That's all we try to get you do-it-yourselfers to calculate. What do you need to reserve for the older you? The older you, as Chris already said, the older you will make the decision if you are going to purchase an annuity, an income annuity in this case, or not. The younger you is simply determining how much the older you will need, and you are whittling that money out of your portfolio, or what I call your cherry pie. You're going to slice that money that needs to be reserved for the older you out. It's going to be reserved and invested appropriately based on when the older you may need it. If the older you's not going to need it for 20 years, you should hopefully be comfortable investing that money in a moderate to moderately aggressive, if not aggressive, manner. But if you're going to need the money in 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 years, I wouldn't go too crazy on how aggressively you invest. Mm-hmm. So does that all make sense, Pete? Chris?
It does. The only thing would add is a question I get all the time, which is if it isn't needed for 15, 20 years, You're going to invest it, like oftentimes, like you mentioned, in the moderate, moderately aggressive, maybe even aggressive category, if you're comfortable with that. But as you get closer to that need, it would be appropriate to dial that more conservative to reduce the risk that you're going to suddenly have, you know, be the victim of some short-term volatility and not have enough when you wanted it. So it's not a set it and forget it. It's something that you should monitor, just like you might change your allocation overall as you approach retirement in the first place. This is kind of another timeline instance where you would want to have this money treated appropriately for its purpose.
Absolutely. I fully agree with that. Okay. So say George is 70 years old and finds he needs an annuity to cover his minimum dignity floor income. Let's also say he will need $1,000 per month at age 75. So he, in his example, doesn't have George waiting that long before he needs the money.
Right.
George is projected to need the money in just 5 years. Mm-hmm. We often see in our office it's longer than 5 years. It could be 10, 15, 20 years. But it's not abnormal to see one needing the money in this shorter time period as well.
Mm-hmm.
And since this is our listener's hypothetical, let's run with that, okay, Chris?
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This income must last his lifetime and be adjusted for inflation. Now, he doesn't put that part in. I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming it needs to be adjusted for
inflation. Yeah, that would be far more typical than just a flat amount because generally someone's naturally occurring secure income, Social Security, is assumed, at least in our forecast, not to grow as fast as the minimum dignity floor. So if there's a gap showing up, in this case for him at 75, that gap is going to typically widen over time as they age. So that would be that inflation adjustment that Jim's talking about there.
Okay. And then, Chris, you'll have to, I should have told you this all ahead of time. We kind of want some numbers, so why don't
I'm live on here. I'm going to do it. I knew where you were headed after you started talking, so I am on the portal that I go to determine
these. Okay, you're on Canix or immediate annuity?
Canix.
Okay, you'll probably want to have both open.
Okay.
Okay, so then he asks, what would that cost him today? So let's pause there, Chris, and get our listeners to understand he has some options, and you and I would be a little bit against him buying an annuity today, but let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, if he bought it today, what would happen if he dies? So what he's talking about, folks, is a deferred income annuity. What would it cost a 70-year-old today in a lump sum that will pay him $1,000 a month in 5 years? He doesn't mention adjustments for inflation. So before we go any further, Chris, why don't you explain to listeners, if we were doing a retirement analysis for someone, and these facts were remaining true. We had a single male client was going to retire at 70.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume turn on Social Security and all of that. Mm-hmm. But your analysis or our analysis we do, which is technically your analysis because you do them now, not me. But your analysis shows he's going to need $1,000 a month beginning in 5 years. You would have also figured out the inflationary pressures on that. How would you have done that? How would you have figured out how much that $1,000 needs to grow on average for the rest of that potential client's life?
Well, what I would do is use our forecasted numbers. So we do forecast these numbers with assumed inflation rates on the minimum dignity floor expenses. And we've talked in the past about how we apply what we think are reasonable assumptions for inflation rates for the different categories. A prime example is something like medical expenses. We'll average inflation more in the 5.5% range overall. We don't apply it even that generally. We actually attach unique inflation rates to premiums versus out-of-pocket expenses and things like that based on industry information we have access to. So we apply those. The inflation rate will be seen. We'll see forecasted expenses in their minimum dignity floor growing over time due to those inflationary pressures. We'll have forecasted the current secure income sources like Social Security at a lower inflation rate. Because Social Security historically has grown at a slower rate from cost of living adjustments than the minimum dignity floor is assumed to grow. Right now we're using 2% in our long-term cost of living adjustment forecasts. If I was forecasting it in the short term, I would certainly use a different number than that since they've been low lately and probably are going to remain that way for a while. But we project those out, and then we can see the difference. It's just a subtraction, right? The look at the expenses, how much bigger they are than the income sources projected. And here, that's what he's found. He's found $12,000 a year at age 75 is going to be his shortage. Now, what we would typically then see is over the coming 10 years, that gap may very well double, which would imply over a 10-year period a growth rate in the gap of 7% or more, you know, more than 7%. Sometimes it's less than that. Sometimes it's more than that. It depends on the circumstances and the unique situation that each person has. So that's how I would look at the gap. I would then solve for what kind of growth rate or inflation I need to see on that annuity income in order to close the gap, to cover up that shortage over time. And that's how I solve for the inflation rate.
Perfect. So let's just assume in this listener's example, because he didn't specify, that his expenses will increase at a 3% a year on average personal inflation rate. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. So he asks again, listeners, what would it cost today for a 70-year-old to put in to begin paying at 75, $1,000 a month, and increase it at 3% for the rest of that person's life. So theoretically, if the analysis was done accurately, we'll never be totally on the bullseye, but as long as you're on the target itself, I think that's good. And of course, you're going to monitor your plan every year. So in this example, what we're hoping, or what he is hoping, is that in combination with his other sources of secure income, the older him will have enough money coming in guaranteed every month to cover his food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses, what we call minimum dignity floor. Chris, can you get that kind of quote this quickly?
Yep,
I apologize for not giving this to you earlier.
Mm-hmm. I already have it.
Okay, so what would it take?
So to generate $12,000 a year, growing 3% every year, which implies that gap that you're trying to close is going to widen 3% every year for life. So a single male in Missouri that is 75 years old, those are the factors involved in the pricing. The other factor is interest rates that are currently in the marketplace. So this is based on current interest rates, not what we think interest rates will be in the future, because we have no idea. So like we can't forecast that. So all we can do is pull quotes based on today's situation. And in today's situation, a 75-year-old male would need about $200,000 to generate $12,000 a year, growing at 3% every year for the rest of his life, no matter how long he lived.
And that's what a 70-year-old would have to put in an annuity?
No, that's what a 75-year-old needs. So I solve for that first.
Okay.
Then we go back to the original data, which says, well, today he's 70. He doesn't need it for 5 years. That's a short enough period that I wouldn't say investing it traditionally would be a wise way to go necessarily. I would play it more safe than that. I would say if you need it in 5 years, consider something like a 5-year MIGA. And if we assume that you could earn, say, 2.4% or something on that on over a five-year period. That means the 70-year-old doesn't have to put away $200,000. They just have to set aside about $178,000 to then have $200,000 when they are 75 to purchase annuity, maybe. And the reason why and somebody's out there probably thinking, why don't you just put it in a deferred annuity and get it be done with it? You don't play this little game where you start out with something else and then buy a SPIA later. Let's just solve this with one stroke. Well, we really prefer you holding on to your own money for as long as possible until you really have determined it's what you want to do with that money, turning it into income for the rest of your life. And you would do that by not giving it permanently up, or not trapping it in something with any kind of restrictions on getting it out. Although my MIGA example, there's certain restrictions in getting it out. But worst case, you get it back in 5 years, you've got the $200,000, and you decide, well, based on my health and my life expectancy, I don't think an annuity is a good idea anymore. And you take that $200,000, you do something else with it. But that's the general approach for something like this. The only modification, if it's a longer period of time, let's say we solved this, and they didn't need it for 15 years when it looks like the shortage occurs when he's 85, then we would look at not a MIGA kind of a situation to bridge the gap between now and then. We would look at appropriate investment choices in order to put that money aside. What kind of rate of return might we expect from that? And that will help us determine how much needs to be set aside today in order to have the, in my example, $200,000 at age 85, in my modified example. Couple of notes before I let Jim chime back in. By pulling quotes like this in today's environment, we're hoping that we're getting kind of a worst case scenario. We're close to worst case, historically bad case, I guess would be the way to describe it, because annuities are priced based on current interest rates. The higher interest rates are, the higher the insurance company can earn with the money you give them, so they can pay you a higher payment. So annuities are less expensive when interest rates are higher. In a low interest rate environment like we're seeing now, these quotes I'm giving you are on the high end historically compared to a higher interest rate environment. So that's why we're comfortable kind of in this environment relying on that. I just came up with that $200,000 figure. As not likely that you'll find when you actually get to 75 that it would cost you more than $200,000. It's actually likely that income that you want, the $12,000 a year growing at 3%, would actually cost you less. If interest rates are higher, that would be the case. So the factors that we do know is you will be 75 5 years from now. That's known, so that's not going to be changing. You're going to be in Missouri. I guess technically you could change it, but the assumption is you're in Missouri. You're male. That's not going to change in this example. And the only variable that we don't know really for the pricing piece is the interest rates at the time. So, but we're in low interest rates environment. Hopefully it'll cost you even less. So if you set aside enough to generate the 200, you should be in a pretty good position.
Okay, perfect. So again, follow some of the logic there, folks, as I walk you through a few more calculations. I know you do-it-yourselfers love to look at this from all angles. Look at the way we're trying to get our listener and listeners, all of you, to understand it. In his example, he knows the shortage is going to be in 5 years. He could purchase.
Well, he forecasts the shortage. Let's be careful. He doesn't know for sure. If he knew for sure, you might do a deferred annuity, right?
Well, true, and we'll get to that. That's where I'm leading to. But in his example, he thinks he's going to need the $1,000 a month beginning in 5 years. Mm-hmm. He could, Chris determined what someone would need in 5 years. You said it was about $200,000,
mm-hmm. right,
with the inflation increase.
Yep.
Okay.
Just so for reference, for those wanting to know, $12,000 a year for life without the 3% would only cost about $160. So that's the cost of that 3% inflation adjustment. The higher the inflation adjustment, obviously, the more expensive it'll become. But there's a pretty good premium on those income annuities that have the inflation adjustment.
Good. I was going to ask you that. So about $40,000 is what it would cost for the inflation adjustment. Is going to cost you another $40,000,
which is 25% more. So there's a 25% premium on this to get the 3% every year.
Okay. And what Chris is explaining is he could purchase a single life annuity. Excuse me. He could purchase a deferred annuity today at 70. And if he now, Chris, you didn't get one. What would a 70-year-old today pay instead of a 75-year-old? If you wanted to buy a deferred annuity, does Canik show that?
No, I don't have easy access to that.
Okay. I pulled it up on immediate annuities, but it does not include an inflation adjustment. Right. But if we were to assume 25% more for inflation.
That's a reasonable assumption, so that would work.
Okay. So according to immediate annuities, well, let me, before we get into that, there are two ways to fund a future shortage, listener and listeners. You can determine everything the way we prefer to do it, and then position the money where you don't give up access and control to it, or permanently give up access and control of it. With just 5 years in our listener's example of when he needs the money, Chris was hesitant to tell him to buy an investment. I think everyone out there, all you do-it-yourselfers know, 5 years is not really a long-term hold, if you will. So you're going to be very careful with it. Chris said we would probably have recommended he put it in a multi-year guaranteed annuity, MIGA for short, which pays a fixed rate of interest for a certain period of time. Chris said, how about a annuity that matures in 5 years and pays 2.4% guaranteed every year for 5 years. Then when that 5 years matures, if the person still has longevity and still needs the income, he transfers the money tax and penalty free right into an income annuity and begins taking the income. And he should have nearly enough money to do that with. Will it be perfect? No. He may be a little bit short or have a little bit too much, but it'll be right around that. That's why Chris recommended that. Obviously, 15 years from now, you're probably going to invest that money and slowly move it more conservative as you get close to needing it. But there's another choice, Chris. Mm-hmm. He could purchase what is called a deferred income annuity. Now, all annuities are technically deferred income annuities. However, the ones we are talking about are irrevocable. Once you buy them, you can't get your money back out. Mm-hmm. It's like the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you no check you in anytime leave. You want, but you can never leave. Something
no,
like that, right?
You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave.
Yeah. So you can buy this annuity whenever you want, mm-hmm. but you can never leave.
Right.
Once you're in it, you're in it. And that's one reason Chris and I don't really care for them, because things can change.
Right.
However, without a doubt, Chris, it is the simple, easiest, most straightforward way if mm-hmm. your main goal was to just take care of it, be done with it, mm-hmm. and not have to worry about what happens to the economy or the markets or interest rates between now and when you need the income.
Or even just not wanting in 5 years to have to deal with the paperwork of buying an annuity at that time. You know, some people do
exactly.
have that concern, especially when we see one of these shortages predicted in their 80s. Some people aren't going to necessarily wait that long, not because they don't really want to, but because they are worried that they will lose mental capacity about how to manage these things, and they just would rather have the 78-year-old or 75-year-old take care of it for them later. And that might be an appropriate use for a deferred annuity if you're comfortable. In that case, the worst thing that can happen is that, well, there's two downsides, I guess, to that. Something happens, you pass away in the short term, and you didn't end up getting any benefit from it. And if you would have held on to it, it would have just been part of your estate to go to someone else. Or it turns on the annuity and it turns out you didn't need it. You didn't need the annuity income, but you know, you're still having income come in. You can still spend it. It's not like it's worthless. It's just going to be an income stream when you would have been fine maybe with asset withdrawals at that time. So there might not be a huge downside in your particular circumstances to the deferred annuity, but because of that benefit of waiting to see how things evolve, that's our preference for not doing the locking in of the deferred new annuity right at the beginning.
Okay. So what I want people to look at with the deferred annuity, it is an option, so we want to make sure we address that to this listener and to you. So I went and looked up, there's a website called immediateannuities.com. You can go to it, click the advanced tab. You can put some information in. So anyways, Chris, I looked up and I said, we have someone in Missouri, age 70, is going to want $1,000 a month beginning at age 75, single male. And it came back at $119,000 would go in today. Call it $120,000. $120,000 today to pay $1,000 a month in 5 years, no cost of living increase. So if Chris's 25, 30% premium for a COLA adjustment holds true, it would cost about $150,000, $160,000 for a deferred annuity, Chris, that would pay $1,000 a month in 5 years, increasing at 3%. Not far off from your calculation, was it?
No, but if people are paying attention, that is less than the set-aside that I gave. I gave a estimate of $178,000 set-aside earning 2.4%, which is kind of a typical in this day and age, a five-year MIGA. That's in the ballpark of what one might get if we're talking today in February of 2021. And the number is noticeably less than that, probably $20,000 plus less. The difference is, yes, you set aside $178,000 in my original example, but you haven't handed it over yet. It's still yours. So it did take an extra $20,000+ off the table for spending, but you can, it's there still. You could access it if you really wanted to, or you changed your mind. You could put in the lower amount, the $150,000+, so $20,000 less, but sayonara, see you later. It's set sail, not to be seen again, at least in a typical sense, in a normal sense.
Right. What Chris is saying, if you bought the deferred income annuity where everything is guaranteed up front, it removes the risk on day one. And some people prefer it that way. Right now, the numbers are indicating to us it would take about $150,000. Now, there's no, I'm not certain on that. It might be a little bit more. This website does not allow for COLA adjustment.
I think it's a little high because I did find in CanEx where I can put the deferred start date in. So if anything, it might be a little high.
Okay. So somewhere around 150. You follow the logic, though, folks. If you put the 150 in a deferred income annuity, it's irrevocable. There's no getting that money back. And even if you did it Chris's way and started with 178 or whatever he suggested, it doesn't mean, Chris, in 5 years, you have to put the entire amount into an immediate income annuity.
Right.
It's just you're doing a calculation to kind of hope there's at minimum enough money to buy that. There might be more than enough money. And you may actually get instead of putting in $200,000, maybe in the future you only have to put in $180,000.
Right.
So just understand what we're trying to do is there's no perfect science. He asked, what would we do in this situation? These are the calculations and the suggestions we would be doing. There's no perfect way of estimating unless you buy the deferred income annuity right up front. But the big thing you're giving up is access to your money. And this is where some of the key starts to come in place, Chris, and you'll see in a minute what I mean. Because he then asks, what would happen if the guy dies? Do you remember that?
Yep.
That is where these numbers are going to start to look different and closer to what Chris is calculating. Because, folks, the annuity quote that I gave you on a deferred income annuity was the cheapest version of a deferred income annuity. And what is that, Chris? Do you know?
The cheapest, just a deferred income annuity, but the cheapest version?
The cheapest way to buy it.
Well, with no guaranteed, no period certain, no
correct.
none of those extra features that you can get for an extra fee.
Exactly. And Chris is spot on there. I'm not testing him. I'm just trying to ask him the question because I know you guys would be thinking the same thing, but he's been doing this long enough with me. He's learning about annuities. To put in $120,000, which we estimate would be closer to maybe $150,000, still less than the $178,000 Chris was calculating. If the annuity owner dies, Chris, at any time, the day after opening it or 30 years later, no money is returned. The money is lost. In other words, the purchaser of the annuity was trying to maximize mortality credits. Remember, when it comes to an income annuity, folks, we've talked about this on previous shows. We haven't talked about it in a while. But the reason annuities can pay more money than a bond can right now in low interest rate environments is because the three elements in every annuity payment is, one, return of the own money you're putting in.
Mm-hmm. Which you can get with bonds.
Interest payments from the insurance company.
Which you could get with bonds. Mm-hmm.
And three, mortality credits or a share of the money of everyone else who was in your annuity pool but has since passed away.
Which is not available if you're a bondholder.
Correct. So it's always cheaper, folks, if you are willing to share, if you're telling the insurance company, put me in an insurance pool only with other people who are willing to share some of their money if they pass away before getting all their money back. So that's why it only cost $120,000. Plus, Chris determined about 25% more for the inflation adjustment, or $150,000 less than the $178,000 Chris is factoring. But Chris, in your strategy, if the guy dies the very next day, what happens to that $178,000?
It's still available to go to whoever he left his money to. So the insurance company doesn't keep it. Your estate keeps it, so it gets directed however you have devised your estate plan.
Exactly. So you would kind of call that what, Chris? A return of premium?
Yeah, if you want to use the language of comparing it to an annuity that you might have bought at the very beginning when you were 70. Mm-hmm. So to replicate that, if you were going to do an annuity right away, a deferred annuity, you'd have to add that feature, return of premium. If at minimum I want my, the money I put in, I want at least that back.
Exactly.
That's called a return of premium.
So when you buy any type of income annuity, this is not a feature that is going to be asked to you if you are buying the index annuities or MYGA annuities that we have been talking about recently, because you are not, quote unquote, annuitizing those annuities. Right. Annuity is a noun. Annuitization is a verb. Annuity just talks about an insurance product. They're not investments, people. Please don't call them or compare them to investments. And if anyone does, or if any article or blog post you're reading says don't buy annuities, investments are better, ignore that article. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. An annuity is not an investment. Okay. An annuity is just referencing a noun, an insurance product that's going to provide a guaranteed stream of income. Annuitization, Chris, is what? It's a verb.
Right. That's the act of, so the action, the verb of turning over your money, saying, walking away, saying, okay, insurance company, it's now yours. It's now yours, and you are on the hook for giving me whatever you've promised in the contract or policy.
Exactly. Annuitization, you give up control of the money, folks, but you get a lifetime stream of income and all the guarantees built into it. In our example, $1,000 a month, growing at 3% a year for the rest of your life, no matter how long you live. You pass that risk on to the insurance company. That's called annuitization. You cannot get the money back once you do that. If you're just putting money in a deferred annuity for principal protection, like a multi-year guaranteed annuity, a MIGA, you're not annuitizing. You're telling the insurance company, hey, you got my money for 5 years. Go do what you want with it. In 5 years, I'm going to come back and get that money out, and you're on the hook to pay me compound interest based on the agreed upon amount on the day I opened it. In Chris's example, 2.4%. But when you buy a deferred income annuity, an annuity that you are buying not for a lump sum payout at the end with a guaranteed rate of interest in the interim period, instead, you are saying, I don't want this money back. I want instead a stream of income to begin at a certain period of time, growing at a certain guaranteed rate. That's annuitization. That's a deferred income annuity. You cannot get your money back. In the quote that I gave you, $120,000 is what a 70-year-old would need to put in to begin $1,000 a month in 5 years for the rest of his life. That quote was for a non-inflation adjusted, no cash refund deferred income annuity, meaning if the owner of that annuity dies at any time, the money they put in, whether they got $1 out of it, $300,000 out of it, or nothing out of it, the remaining money goes to everyone else in the insurance pool. Because of that willingness to share, it costs less money to buy, Chris, because there's less risk. Anyone dies early, the annuity pool doesn't have to pay this money out. The insurance company can keep it and use it to pay people later on in life. Follow the logic there?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want the ability, if you're going to sit there and say, oh my God, no, I see why Chris's idea is better. I would put $178,000 in. And if the worst case scenario happened to me, I die the very next day I opened this. Because you're essentially creating your own deferred income annuity, folks, with Chris's strategy. You're going to put $178,000 in a multi-year guaranteed annuity that pays you 2.4% a year for 5 years. And then when it matures, it should have enough money to buy an immediate annuity that will pay you $1,000 a month with a 3% increase for the rest of your life. That's what Chris just designed. So Chris, under your strategy, you essentially have full access to your money. If you die in day one of your five-year MIGA, the penalty period of 5 years, what happens to that penalty period the day the owner dies, Chris?
If you die, it goes away. That's one of the outs.
Exactly. So you don't get the money, folks, but your beneficiaries will get it. Day one, the penalty period goes away. The death benefit is always guaranteed to be no less than what you put in, plus any guaranteed compound growth, annual compound growth, minus any withdrawals you may have taken. So it's totally there. The money is guaranteed, totally there. If you want that kind of guarantee, Chris, with a deferred income annuity, you need to put in $152,000 today to be guaranteed $1,000 a month. Not increased for inflation, beginning in 5 years. So how much more, if we're going to do the 25% scenario, would you think it would cost today for a deferred income annuity with a full guarantee? It's called a return of premium, or it's called a cash refund or an installment refund. It goes by different names. So what is 25% of $152,000, Chris?
Increase by 25% would make it 190.
So you would have to put in about 190,000 today to replicate what Chris created with about 178. So what do you think of that, Chris?
I think those quotes you have are a little on the high side, but
don't blame me. I'm only
point.
Going to
no, it proves the point. I did in CanX, they're a little bit lower, but you're absolutely right. When we put in the cash refund, which is one form of getting your premium back, there's also installment refund where they'll pay it to you in the payments until you
can. I just pause you right there for one second. Mm-hmm. CanX, what Chris is using is what we normally use. ImmediateAnnuities.com, folks, is kind of a retail site.
Yeah.
That's why we get much more accurate information than what you can get from what I'm doing. Yeah. I don't have access to CanX here at home. We only have it on Chris's work computer.
Immediate Annuities is available to everybody, though, so you can go look up some of these things
yourself. You can get close, but we can always do better on CanX than Immediate Annuities. That's why there's this disparity in prices. But go on, Chris, mm-hmm. because it's interesting. I want to see what CanX shows with a cash refund.
So with a current quote right as of today, with payments starting 5 years from now, our whole story we've been describing with the 3% inflation with a cash refund. So if you pass away before the income starts, once the income starts, no more, right? And once the income starts, it's fully annuitized. And so you still have that risk there. But if you pass away during that 5-year delay period before the income starts, you get all the money back. Well, you don't. Your beneficiaries get all the money back. Quote from an A++ rated insurance company, $163,000. I won't name the company unless Jim wants to. But that is the highest insurance rating that you can get. So that's a super high quality company that should be trustworthy in meeting their promises. So $163,000 today. If you pass away before turning on the income 5 years from now, you're guaranteed to get the $163,000 back, your estate or your beneficiary specifically, which is noticeably higher than about $130,000 is all you had to put in if you were willing to not have that guaranteed cash refund, which was also a bit lower than Jim's quote that he had. So we're pulling quotes that are a bit better than what you're seeing on ImmediateAnnuities.com.
One thing I do want to correct you on, Chris, with the cash refund post-death, your beneficiaries will receive what you put in minus any withdrawals. So if you put in 160 and received 100, right.
Yeah, I did say that wrong. I said that wrong. Because you technically will have gotten everything back, but they'll have paid it partly in payments to you, and then the balance as the rest of the cash until somebody's gotten all the money back. The just writing you a lump sum check or your beneficiaries for the full amount of the premium that you paid, that happens just in the 5-year delay period. Your beneficiaries would get less any money they've paid to you with the payment started, like Jim described. Yes, that's totally correct.
So you can see when you start looking at these numbers, folks, it starts to get closer and closer to what we were calculating. Mm-hmm. Again, there's no perfect science to this. The best we can do is get close. The question becomes for our listener, do you want absolute on day one, just set this up, be done, not worry about it, then you would go with a deferred income annuity, DIA for short, DIA. You would go with a deferred income annuity. Then you would have to decide whenever you buy an income annuity, whether it's a deferred income annuity or an immediate income annuity, SPIA, single premium immediate annuity. Whether you buy a DIA or a SPIA, you should be asked. We always ask. You will be asked, I usually say to people, do you want to share in mortality credits?
Or not.
Or do you want to guarantee your money is never forfeited? Those are your two choices. If you're willing to share in mortality credits, it's going to cost you less money up front. If you want to guarantee your money is never forfeited, you or your beneficiaries will always receive at minimum whatever it is you put in, then you would go with the cash refund. Mm-hmm. So those are the two options that you would consider. So when he asks what would happen if the person died, Well, listener, depends what type of annuity you purchased. If you did, again, the DIA, depends if you got it with a cash refund or a non-cash refund. If you went with Chris's strategy, because you had just a five-year period between when you needed it and when the income had to be, excuse me, when you bought it and when the income had to begin, if you went with Chris's strategy using a five-year MIGA and then let the 75-year-old you decide if it still made sense to buy an income annuity, which is our preferred way of doing it, then, of course, if you die during the 5 years that the MIGA has the money, Chris, there's no risk at all. Your beneficiaries will inherit whatever you put in, plus any compounded interest the MIGA earned each year. Remember, Chris, in the DIA, deferred income annuity, with the cash refund, right.
You only get what you put in back.
You only get what you put in. You don't get any compounding interest. But in the MIGA, you get what you put in plus the compounded interest minus anything you might have took out. And hopefully you didn't take anything out because it defeats the purpose of what you're trying to do.
Right.
So again, from that standpoint, I think the MIGA strategy that you're talking about in this particular example is flexible, makes the most sense, delays annuitization, lets the older you make the decision, but God forbid you passed away during it. Not only do your beneficiaries get what you put in, they actually will get the earnings as well, whereas on the deferred income annuity, you don't get those earnings.
Mm-hmm. I want to add a couple things, just I think for people's interest. The quotes that we've been kind of throwing out are scalable for the most part, which means we've been doing all these examples on a $12,000 per year income benefit. If you needed $60,000, you could take all these quotes and multiply them by five. And that's going to be almost to the dollar what the cost of the policy would be. So they're scalable. All the numbers are the same. It just gets bigger if you want more income. That's one comment I would make. So if you want some examples under current interest rate environment quotes of what would it look like with a number other than 12,000, just scale it based on what you're wanting to see run there. The other thing I'll point out is this was for a single person. I know we have a lot of couples out there, a couple in Missouri, each of the same age. So just in, I had to pick an age to run it. But if you're both 70 years old, married in Missouri, if you wanted that 12,000 a year, this is back to the original quote. So I gave for the single male, it was $200,000. And when this story first started, the equivalent annuity for a couple that will pay until both of you are gone, not reducing, so still paying the $12,000 a year, even after the first person passes, you can buy them where it reduces on the first death, but keeping it simple. So it's just $12,000 a year growing at 3% for as long as both of you are alive. Instead of $200,000, 260 is the quote. So it adds about 30% in this particular example. But there's another variable here that you'd have to factor in, which is age difference. Younger age for either spouse, higher premium. Older age, lower premium. So it's hard to make adjustments beyond that. But I wanted to give people a sense for what would a joint annuity cost for a married couple if they were looking for the same $12,000 a year growing at 3% every year.
Okay, I want to add a little to that. What Chris just said is totally true, but think of the math behind it and it'll make sense, folks. Remember, Chris, all the time, let me back up, folks. Many annuity companies, not all of them, but many, many annuity companies sell two lines of insurance. Income annuities and life insurance. Mm-hmm. Because, folks, they hedge risk. What's the risk, Chris, to a life insurance company? If you only sold life insurance and then all of a sudden a pandemic hit, what's the big risk to life insurance companies with life insurance?
People dying too soon. People dying earlier than expected.
Exactly. I mentioned the pandemic now because we're knee-deep in this crap. If you're an insurance company and the only line of insurance you're selling is life insurance, and all of a sudden people you thought who were going to live another 15, 20, 25, 30 years are starting to drop like flies. That's a huge risk to you. Mm-hmm. If you are an annuity company, Chris, and you are selling future streams of income for the rest of your life, and all of a sudden healthcare is getting better and better and better and people are living longer, what's your risk?
That's the risk to annuity side of business, is people live longer than expected. So you can see if people suddenly start dropping like flies, like Jim mentioned, the life insurance side gets hammered, but the annuity side of the business wins because they're not having to give so much money back because there's not people claiming those income streams because they're gone. So it's exactly a perfect marriage from the insurance
perfect
company's
hedge
side, because it hedges their risk, yes.
So you will often see life insurance companies be very involved with annuities. Mm-hmm. Not all the time,
yep,
but often very, very involved.
Yep.
Remember what we also say, Chris, about permanent life insurance, which we're big fans of. Again, we are not, if you're a new listener, we are not an insurance pushing firm. We are a retirement planning firm. We truly are. If you're a longtime listener, you know we only talk and try to teach you. But when you're trying to guarantee an inheritance, new listeners, especially if you have a special needs child, or you want to make sure you can tithe a certain amount to your church, or you have a lot of excess required minimum distributions or very large IRAs and your beneficiaries are going to be nailed in taxes because of the 10-year payout now, life insurance is one way of protecting that. And we always tell people, insure two lives. And it is much cheaper to buy life. It always is. If you bought life insurance alone, or if you bought it with your spouse, I don't care if your spouse is sicker than you are, it will always be cheaper to buy life insurance on two people than one.
Right.
And if you're trying to guarantee an inheritance that needs to be paid at the death of the second spouse, you should not be buying life insurance on one of you. It's cheaper to buy it on two of you if the risk, Chris, that you're trying to cover comes due when the second spouse dies. And the reason it's cheaper, the chances of both people dying right away is slim, correct, Chris?
Right. Less than the chances of one dying early. Yep.
The opposite happens, folks, with income annuities. The reason you got to put more in, remember, life insurance and income annuities are the mirror opposite of each other. The big risk to the insurance companies, Chris, when you're insuring two lives for an income payout is what?
You're living too long.
One of them lives a long time.
Right.
Maybe one of them dies pretty soon, but there's a greater risk that one of them is going to live a lot longer. So two people always have to put more money in to buy an income annuity, but two people always put less money in, folks, to buy life insurance. And if you understand how they work and how their mirror opposites, makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
The final thing I want to do before we wrap up, because I know Chris has to go. A lot of you do-it-yourselfers may be sitting here saying, why would you even want to do any of this? I'm a Vanguardian. I have all my money at Vanguard. I manage it myself. Or we recently ran in, I think it was yesterday, Chris, I spoke to one of our first Fidelians. They told me when I talked to them on the phone, they said, I'm a do-it-yourselfer, Jim, but I'm not a Vanguardian. He says, I'm a Fidelian. And I thought, yeah, that makes
sense.
They're
not our first. We see a lot of Vanguard, but we do see a fair amount of Fidelity, and we've got Schwabians out there too.
We don't see many Fidelians and Schwabians.
Not as
and
many
we've
as
never
Vanguard,
seen,
but
which surprises me. I was thinking about that this morning as I was showering. I don't know why in the shower I was thinking about this, but I was thinking, we've never seen a T. Rowe Price-ian, which, again, first of all, the name is kind of long.
Yeah, very
rare.
We have
to come up with something better for T. Rowe Price-ians. But it sounds like we're creating a cast of characters on the rebirth of Game of Thrones. We have the Vanguardians against the Fidelians, against the Schwabians, and watch out for the T. Rowe Price-ians. They're under the bridge, but when they come out. Anyways, folks, back to what I'm saying. All you do-it-yourselfers might be thinking, why the hell would you want to do that? I'm going to continue to manage my money. I'm 55, I'm 60, I'm 65 maybe. I'm going to do this on my own. I don't need the benefit of an insurance company. Please remember, folks, Chris and I believe passionately in what we do, and we always tell you, you need to keep things as simple as possible for the older you. You're not doing this for the 50, 55, 60-year-old you, even 65-year-old you. You're trying to put a plan in place. This original listener told us, this guy who's 70 is going to need the money at 75, and he's going to need it forever. What if he lives to 85, 90, 93, 95? I know we talk about this. I'll let you end, Chris, with this thought for our listeners. What happens to your interest and abilities in financial matters as you age for most people, Chris?
Well, it's kind of a double whammy. There's a clear decline in the portion of your brain. Even if you don't have severe mental degradation, it's just a natural process where the part of your brain that handles number crunching and finances degrades over time at various rates, but it does degrade. It's the rare person that's as sharp on these things at 90 as they are when they were 60. Can happen, but that's very, very rare. The double whammy I'm talking about is not only does that happen, your sense that you can still do these things doesn't decline. So your confidence in being able to do them doesn't decline. You don't, in other words, you don't realize there's this degradation, which puts you in a very precarious situation. That's why a lot of seniors are taken advantage of. They don't quite understand what's going on, but they think they do. And that's unfortunately why they become victims of a lot of financial fraud. So to protect against that, that's a good reason to keep things simple. Keeps low stress for the older you, keeps it straightforward, easy to follow. There's, you know, most people even think of a young child. They can handle the concept of an allowance. They get a certain amount every week. As long as they get that, they know they can buy this, that, and the other during the week when they go to school and buy some treats after school or whatever. And they know every Sunday they're going to get another allowance. Makes perfect sense even to a 10-year-old. Not that every 90-year-old's like a 10-year-old, but it's a similar circumstance. They can pretty much handle that. They understand that. Oh, my check gets deposited every fifth of the month or whatever, and now I know this is what I get to spend this month, and I spend it as appropriate and on the things I want, and then I get another check deposited, and it just kind of happens. I don't have to do anything. So that's part of the attraction, not just the numbers. A lot of people get so hooked on the number comparisons, they forget about the human comparison and what's going to happen and what you need to look out for yourselves as you age.
Exactly. So as we wrap up, folks, because we ran out of time today, keep that in mind. We like this process and approach because it's simple. And one thing, and Chris did allude to this, if you do his strategy, our strategy, I won't say Chris's strategy, our strategy. And in our example that the listener gave us, the person, Chris, needed the money in 5 years. What if they needed it in 15 years at age 85? There's the possibility the 85-year-old's not going to quite remember this was the whole strategy.
Right.
So if you're squirreling money away at 70 and you still have a pretty good understanding of what you're doing, you want to make sure you're working with a firm, a financial planning firm that has a vested interest in what you're doing. And even if you're a do-it-yourself investor, the firm is at least keeping track. Well, Chris in this example, we'll call him George. George in this example put it aside in 2021. The intent was to use it in 2028 or 2032 to purchase an income annuity. If you don't have a firm that's tracking it for you, make sure you're documenting somewhere what in the heck it is you're doing. So when you get into your late 70s and your 80s, and it's getting time that this needs to be implemented, your beneficiaries, your agents, your appointed guardian, someone's going to understand what it is you're doing because you may not. That's perhaps the biggest risk of doing it our way. Now, of course, if you're doing it our way, you're probably a client of ours, and hopefully you're maintaining a relationship with us. We're working with you on an ongoing basis, and we're tracking all this so we can explain it, especially married couples. There's usually one couple who's totally into this, Chris, one couple who's not, and the couple who's into it is the one that passes away. And if that happens and we're involved, we can easily help the surviving spouse. Here's what so-and-so was doing. Here's the strategy. We've got you covered. But if you're not working with a firm like that and you're a do-it-yourselfer, make sure you're documenting all this. Mm-hmm. I would think that is the biggest risk to our preferred way of doing things, because we want to hold off giving up access and control of your money as long as possible. But the risk is you create more complexity later.
Right.
But the gist is, folks, you are trying to put in place a plan now to protect the older you, who is not going to understand managing assets, may not even be interested in managing assets. Do not look at your retirement through the eyes of a 55, 60, 65-year-old. Look at what you're trying to do through the eyes of an 80, 85, 90-year-old. If your parents are still alive, listeners, ask yourself, could they manage their portfolio the way I'm managing mine? Be honest with yourself on that. Okay, that's about it. I want to wrap up. I want to thank everyone for listening. Hopefully they found this beneficial, Chris. I think this question was good. And listener, I know you asked two questions. Your second question will become an EDU show as well, but it's much more involved than you think. And I'll be reaching out to you for some more info.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll have some type of new EDU show next week. I'm hoping we finally get to our kind of wrapping up a few of the long-term care concepts or items that we were going to deal with Greg. Once our schedules align, we'll have him back on the show to share a few interesting pieces that we haven't talked about in great detail yet. But just like this, listener, if you have an idea for an EDU show, let us know. Go to the website, jimhelps.com. That's jimhelps.com. On there, there's a contact form. Plus, you can learn a little bit more about us. So we appreciate everybody listening, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.